The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are M. Scott James, Dennis Norton, Dillis Powell, and Frank Muir. Round one tries to test their respective vocabularies, and for this Christmas edition, some at least of the words relate to food or drink. 2 marks for correct answers. M. Scott James, what's the meaning of bohea? B-O-H-E-A.
That comes in Kate Greenaway, I think. A cup of nice bohea. It's a kind of tea.
Do you remember what kind of tea?
China tea, we think.
Good enough. It's black tea of the lowest possible quality, the last crop of the season. It comes from a province in China which was called Wuyi, north of Fujian, if that helps you to identify it geographically. But this is a bit confusing because at the time when Alexander Pope was writing about it in the 18th century, it was then one of the finest rather than the nastiest kinds of tea. 2 marks. Frank Muir, what is degustation?
It's a function.
Yes?
It's a function performed by a bismuth tablet. Taking the wind out. It sounds to me like a French word one sees written up rather frequently in La Belle France.
Yes, it's a French word.
Which is it's a sort of French equivalent of delicatessen, isn't it? And it probably comes from goût, taste.
It does?
It's edibles. Degustation is where you go to have things which are nice to taste.
Absolutely right. 2 marks. It's a tasting, as, for instance, with a wine tasting, and it is a pretty rare 16th century verb, degustate. To taste from French. Dennis Powell, what's the meaning of ampulla? A-M-P-U-L-L-A. Ampulla.
Something rather small, I think.
Yes, not very big.
That's an ampullet. That's a small egg.
I thought it was like an ampoule, which contains the thing you inject.
Well, there are various ways of injecting.
It's a very small flask or something. Very small. File. A file.
Yes, looking like what, though?
Looking like what? Mm. Hollow.
How would you pick it up?
Oh, by the handle.
How many?
2.
Ha-ha. 2 marks it is. That's what I was trying to get. It's a small Roman flask or bottle with 2 handles. It was later in ecclesiastical circles a vessel for holding the consecrated oil. In biology, it's the dilated end of a vessel or duct in an animal. And it's very, very much smaller than the Greek amphora, which held something like 6 or 9 gallons. Yes, that much bigger. Dennis Norton, what precisely is or was rot gut?
It's a cheap kind of liquor, generally rather deleterious in character.
I think that'll do, Dennis.
It's that wine that was offered for testing, and the report came back, this horse is unfit for work.
Well, pulling you back to precision, in England, it, more specifically, it was bad small beer. In the USA, it was normally inferior whiskey. Before we begin round two, there are 2 quotations for the teams to write down, and I want the 2 women team members to go on studying them, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton, your quotation is, a good example is the best sermon. And Dillis Powell and Frank, yours is, stand a little less between me and the sun, S-U-N. And then the last round of the program, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. On our round of inside-out definitions, what I do is to give the definition first, and then I hope members of the team will tell me who, what, or where the definition refers to. 2 marks. And Scott James, what is the force which tells us why an apple doesn't go to heaven?
What are you talking about?
What is the force which tells us why an apple doesn't go to heaven?
The force of gravity.
Why?
Because apples, by and large, have to fall downwards rather than upwards.
Yeah, there's actually another interesting thing about apples. Why is it that if you've got a tree in your garden, your apples fall in the neighbour's garden, but his leaves fall in your garden? That's a force that's never been explained.
That's sure bad luck, that one.
Have you got a good cure for silver leaf while we're on the subject?
No. No, you're quite right. It's a force of gravity or gravitation. There was a famous apple which fell on Isaac Newton's head and woke him up to the force that caused it to do so, gravitation. Frank Muir, the place bad plays go when they die.
The place bad girls go is Paris.
Yeah, no. Bad plays.
Well, that's a joke, written by somebody else. Yeah. So, presumably, this is a joke on a joke.
Yes, it is a joke on a joke, but probably push it back into the 1930s and 40s, makes it easier.
Place bad players go. Not to BBC. No, it's going to be good.
Oh, no.
Still, isn't it?
It's Hollywood.
No, I don't.
Yes, that's right. The place is Hollywood, according to George Jean Nathan, but he was, in fact, as Frank hinted, parodying an earlier saying by Oscar Wilde about where good and bad Americans go when they die. 2 marks. So this far, the alliance of two people, one of whom never remembers birthdays and the other never forgets them. What is it?
Marriage.
Yeah. All right, 2 marks. Marriage. Ogden Nash. Dennis Norton, when a guy gets stabbed in the back and instead of bleeding, he sings.
That was Schnozzle Durante. Was originally said that. Talking about opera.
Yep, I've got Ed Gardner, but probably Schnozzle Durante came first. I'm not very clear about that one. Anyway, no. 2 more.
Predated Duffy's Tavern.
Well, now we look for the odd man out. What I do is to give sets of four, in which three are in some way connected together, and one isn't. There's some seasonal reference to food and drink again. 2 marks. And Scott James, avocado, tangerine, yam, mango.
Yam's a sweet potato.
Yes.
The other three are fruits.
That's what I wanted.
Oh, three are fruits and one's a veg.
Yep. 2 marks. Frank Muir, Carrier, Fodor, Mrs. Beaton, Raymond Postgate.
Well, John Le Carrier is the cookery writer who wrote The Pie That Came In From the Cold. Mrs. Beaton is the cookery writer who didn't write First Catch Your Hair. That's two cookery writers. Mm-hmm. The third one is... Who was the third cookery writer?
Raymond Postgate.
Raymond Postgate! So, Fodor isn't a cookery writer, and is the odd man out.
Robert Carrier, Mrs. Beaton, Raymond Postgate all wrote Guides to Food, among other things. Fodor is a series of American guidebooks to foreign countries, which, of course, include some reference to the kind of food you might find there, but are general guides. Dennis Powell, hippocampus, hippocras, hippopotamus, and eohippus.
Hippocras is
the odd one out.
Why? What is it?
Well, the others are sort of creatures.
Yes.
I know what hippocras is. Hippocras is a drink. And it was called hippocras because it was sieved through a kind of medical sieve.
Yes.
Hence the hippocras, the Hippocratic Oath from doctors.
Oh. An exceptional erudition and 3 marks. Hippocras was indeed wine flavoured with spices and probably named after the Greek physician Hippocrates because it was strained through this curious filter called Hippocrates' sleeve, which always strikes me as rather unhygienic. The other three...
Well, he wasn't in it.
The other three are all animals. Eohippus is the tiny ancestor of the modern horse. Hippocampus is the seahorse, also very small. Hippopotamus doesn't need describing by me. Dennis Norton, Vouvray, Sancerre Sauvignon, Meursault, and Muscadet.
Oh, yeah, this is one of those wine-bibbing things. One of them is, and the other three aren't, either white or
sparkling.
Or from a certain hillside in France.
I know where Sancerre comes from. It's a Loire wine.
Yes, that's right.
All right, well, then that's either the exception or the...
or the rule.
Yeah.
Meursault is a white Burgundy from the Côte d'Or. The other three are all from the Loire, Vouvray, Sancerre Sauvignon, and Muscadet.
Very well.
Yeah.
Well, now we have a round of seasonal words and expressions. 2 marks, please, give the meanings of the following words and how they originated. And Anne Scott James, the waits, W-A-I-T-S, the waits.
Well, they mean the carol singers.
Yes.
And the origin thereof, we think, is... Oh, something terribly obvious. They took so long piping up and getting their pipes in tune and getting their voices going. It's a delaying word. It's to wait.
Yes, street musicians who serenaded the principal parts of the district, usually on Christmas Eve. And at one time, it was the duty of these musical watchmen to pipe the watch nightly in the King's Court four times from Michaelmas to Shrove Tuesday and three times in the summer. Probably they're called waits because the oboe was formerly called a wait. Hogmanay.
Hogmanay is the high point of Scottish life. It's the last day of the old year.
Yes.
New Year's Eve, south of the border.
And what happens?
Oh, everything happens. There's fierce hooting.
It's a very odd word. You don't.
Very.
I came.
Well, it's hug me knee, actually, because amidst all this revelry, if you're a Scots with a kilt and you hug your knees, it stops anybody's tampering with your spine. Confirmation to about which we wish.
Isn't a word for whiskey, is it?
No, that's Escobar.
One and a half. It's the name given in Scotland still to the last day and night of the old year when first footing is practiced just after midnight. The first foot to enter the house in the new year, they're usually asked rude rhymes and asked for cakes or money. But the origin is an odd one. Hogmanay is probably from the French au gui la neuf, which doesn't mean au gui...
It's a long way from the French.
It means to the mistletoe of the new year. It's the first toast that you drank inside the house. Good luck to the mistletoe. To this part, why are mince pies traditional Christmas fare?
I think they had all the leftovers from the turkey in them, mincemeat.
Yes, before that. Long before turkeys.
Before turkeys. Goose they had. Capon they had.
They were made of mincemeat.
Yes, they originally shaped like the manger or crib and were presented to guests to symbolise the Christ child's crib of birth. And they were originally, as Frank quite rightly says, nourishing mutton pies. And then as the rest of Christmas food got richer and richer and richer, they were changed to the present fruit mince. Dennis Norton, the boar's head.
It's a traditional dish which used to be eaten at Christmas, but goodness knows now, you probably get boar's head fingers... or rings, as you think. It comes in rings. I think part of my world ended when spaghetti came in rings. It started off when soup came in envelopes. From the Anglo-Saxon word bursed, which was a druidical festival which was held round about the time of the winter equinox.
Yes, you're quite right.
And
it's not there, quickly.
And they ate bursed, or as Professor Neville Coggle will have it, bursed.
Jolly good. Serving a boar's head on a dish at Christmas was said to be derived from Scandinavian mythology because they had a god of peace and plenty who was particularly useful at Yuletide called Freyr, who rode in on a boar, which was called Gullinbursti, for that matter. And his festival was at that time of the year when a boar was sacrificed and the head was carried in on a gold or silver dish and crowned in all sorts of ways and with a flourish of trumpets and minstrels and all the rest of it. And there is a famous boar's head carol which was sung before Prince Henry at St. John's, Oxford in 1607. Well, now we come to the last round. Two marks and Scott James. Can you give me the origin of yours? A good example is the best sermon.
It's a very, very, very dull thought. and I can only think it's an old trad proverb.
It is. Two marks. It comes in Hayward, I think, in his collection of proverbs.
I was about to say Hayward, because it's the only proverb book the one's ever heard of.
16th century. Well, now, dear Sparky, given the origin of yours, stand a little less between me and the sun.
Well, that's another of those classical remarks.
Yes.
It was said by Diogenes.
Absolutely right, yes. Two marks. Well, now I'm going to ask Dennis and Frank to come up with their improbable explanations of how these quotations came into being. And for this round only, the marks will go to whichever improbable story gets the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Dennis Norden and his. A good example is the best sermon.
One of my favourite books is a thick volume entitled The Hypochondriac's Guide to Ill Health. Now, if, like me, you are one of those people who wear a thermometer on your key ring, you'll find it a veritable treasure trove. But while I was leafing through it the other day, trying to pick out which illness to have next, it suddenly occurred to me how out of date so many of the maladies that they offer you are. I mean, things like housemaid's knee, coachman's elbow. They're occupational hazards relating to occupations that hardly exist anymore. And what the world needs now, I thought to myself reading this, is not love, sweet love. It's a list of similar afflictions, but ones that pertain to our contemporary lifestyle. A similar catalogue. I thought, surely the modern sort of technological society that we live in must have thrown up these kind of health hazards that are peculiar to our time. And I thought, such as what? In the category of female complaints, which takes so much time in the old-fashioned medical books, what about modern female complaint? Well, I would designate cosmetic astigmatism. That's a form of impaired vision and rapid blinking caused by putting on false eyelashes the wrong way round. On the other hand, a common form of injury peculiar to the male sex nowadays is one you might call trendsetter's dislocation. Now, that's a peculiarly painful form of accident, which occurs sometimes when you bend over to zip up your trousers and you happen to be wearing one of those dangling pendants. You know, the longer I thought about this, about the way we live now, the more of these complaints came to mind. I thought, what about pornographer's squint? Now, I draw no conclusions about any of these ailments, nor do I issue any moral reproofs about them. No. My claim to next year's Nobel Prize for Medicine is based solely on the fact that I am the first man to give samples of these maladies, to give a sample of aches and pains which have never occurred before. And that in itself, I think, should be enough to qualify me for, as the old proverb said, or nearly said, a good ache sample is the best sermon.
Still wish Dennis every good health, and go on to Frank Muir. And if you remember, his was Stand a Little Less Between Me and the Sun.
I'm very interested to read in the paper that Claude Monet's painting, The Girl Walking by the River near Saint-Cloud, has been sold to a Texan who wanted it very much for a drinks tray. And this is, as you know, is a very important painting because it's the first time that Monet actually included a figure in his work. Why did he paint it? Very interesting story. Now, he put the figure in and started painting that picture the evening of the first Impressionist exhibition in Paris in 1874. He and all the other young Impressionists were very, very poor, and they'd taken this hall to put on their pictures. And they were all terribly excited that morning, and they met at the cafe in Montmartre. And they were all looking forward, the meeting was about to open, the exhibition was about to open in about an hour. And old Claude Monet, he said,
It will not work. It will not work. You have gone all wrong, mes amis. All wrong. You only paint is women. Women. Degas. Degas, a great fat woman washing the back of her neck over a basin. Flesh in the pan. Flesh in the pan. That is all. Manet. Manet. Edouard Manet. Déjeuner sur l'herbe. Woman sitting there on a bare turf. Oh, like that. Renoir, the bather. Another girl like a mauve sea cow. Sitting on wet turf. They will not like it. I go. You have your exhibition. I go. I go to my little stretch of the Seine near Saint-Cloud, and I will paint the river and the lights on it. Goodbye. Good luck. And he went off. They all got very excited, and Van Gogh said, I will get beer for us all. Come on, a last toast, landlord, beer. He said, you have no money. He said, surely I can pledge something. I tell you what, landlord, my only ear for the beer. They had one drink, and then this motley gang of poor painters went to their exhibition. And it was a riot. It was a fantastic success. The people of Paris had never seen such voluptuous figures in their nakedness and ordinary surroundings. The Spanish ambassador, he went over to the bather sitting on the turf, and he seemed to be so grateful for it. Emile Zola and his lovely wife Gorgon, and there was Baudelaire was camping around, absolutely reeking of fleur du mal. And George Sand swept in like a ship under full sail, escorted by her two lovers. She went everywhere like that, with a Chopin to starboard and a Liszt to port. Everybody was saying, it is marvellous. And finally, every painting was sold, not for 10 or 15 francs, which they hoped, for 100 francs, 150 francs. The Spanish ambassador paid 200 francs for Renoir's The Bather, and he had to take it away with him. He wouldn't be part. He said, I cannot leave her behind alone. And he went Renoir, with the money in his hand, rushed over to his old friend at Saint-Cloud, and there was Claude Monet painting away his river. Nobody anywhere near. No model or anything painting his river with his lovely little splashes. And he said, Claude, Renoir said, look, they have my big fat woman, they've paid me. He said, how much for your women? He said, you should paint women. He said, never, I will not sell my art. How much do you get, 10 francs, 12 francs? He said, 200 francs. What is it? De song from for un bon pong. And very slowly, he counted the 200 francs. And then he said, Mon ami, a petite commission, s'il vous plaît. Mettez une poulette entre moi et la rivière. Which, very roughly translated, means, stand a little less between me and the Seine.
Vote, ladies and gentlemen. Frank Muir wins the story, but nevertheless the other team, Anne Scott James and Dennis, they win the entire contest, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
Taking part in My Word were Anne Scott James, Dillis Powell, Dennis Norton and Frank Muir. The chairman was Jack Longman. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore, and the program was produced by Tony Schrein.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time.
I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding and bring it out here. We won't go until we got some. We won't go until we got some. We won't go until we got some. So bring some out here. Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding, oh, bring us some figgy pudding, oh, bring us some figgy pudding and bring it out here. We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Tis the season to be jolly, la 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 la. Till the grass is ready for busting, la 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 la. Sing the ancient Christmas carol, la 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 la. Do 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 do. See the flowing bowl before us.
La 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 la. Feel bad.
Start the band and join the chorus.
La 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 la.
Follow me in merry measure. La 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 la. While we sing of mirth and pleasure.
While we sing of mirth and pleasure.
La 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 la. La 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 la. Whilst the festive season passes, join the funky lads and lasses, singing gaily all together.
La 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 la.
Mind is all the wind and weather.
La 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 la
la la la la la. Merry Christmas to you.